Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is now or never. And that debt is fraud. And actually, I have a friend, colleague, and old boss that I went, psst, that debt is fraud. And I was expecting him to possibly come back and go, what do you mean by that? But that didn't happen. So what I may do in the near future when I need to dive into it, because I need to dive into it regularly as far as how that debt is fraud. You need to understand, we need to place context to these things, because folks, if we don't have context, then we're not connecting the dots here, okay? So you're welcome if you are looking to make an appeal to heaven, or if you have been and you want to continue doing so, or because we ask you to, because we believe in the power of prayer, but we would be happy to post your prayer circle information or what have you if you want to organize and provide it for other people to join you. Let me know. We have Loudoun Liberty up there. And actually, I know that there's a few state people that have joined in. So anyway, your campaign begins now. We're already behind the eight ball. We need to launch campaigns immediately when it comes to unseating the people that just got seated. You don't wait until you file. You have a better chance of winning if you actually run a PR campaign today. We want to talk a little bit about that. But if you're looking to restore the Senate suffrage, I should say, restore your state legislature suffrage in the U.S. Senate, you need to get involved. You need to, you know, contact us, because we want you to start making, because these are all ways that you can actually make your legislators look like idiots, because they don't understand the Constitution. Unfortunately, there's so few people that do, but I'm proud of you, because I know that you've been listening and you're absorbing this, and there's no doubt in my mind you're becoming that E.F. Hutton. That is the goal for the show, is to try to create a league of people who understand the Constitution. The only way we're going to understand the Constitution is constantly cover how they created it, how they defined it, all of these types of details. I know Madison downplayed the Constitutional Convention and, you know, what these men were thinking in the creation. But in some respects, there is some necessity to go back to that. And as a matter of fact, the state suffrage in the Senate is one of those things. And I kind of talked about this before, but I'm going to repeat this because it's that important. You have to remember, at the very beginning of the Constitutional Convention, the Virginia Plan was provided as the solution to this inept Articles of Confederation. Now, they were kind of being ambitious, and they were drafting kind of a new government, but they weren't even close. And as a matter of fact, they were only going to have one legislative body. So it wasn't really the American innovation that I think the divine hand of providence wanted. I believe this is where Roger Sherman came in. As the New Jersey Plan was presented to basically keep the status quo and to basically move forward with, it was basically a redo or almost keeping the Articles of Confederation. And everybody goes, well, no. I mean, if we do this, then we would basically be laughed at, kind of in the same way John Jay was laughed at when he came back with that treaty for the Mississippi River with Spain. There was this huge struggle. There was this huge fight. And as a matter of fact, it came down to this. When the bigger states with the Virginia Plan said, why not? Why not let us have apportionment, you know, in the House of Representatives so that, you know, there will be an equal apportionment for people. And they said, because there won't be an equal proportion per state. And we don't trust you, big states. You're going to basically suck us up. We don't trust you. You have to protect. We need to protect our sovereignty or we're leaving. And there were enough little states that they had to make the concession. Out of the big states, and when I say big states, I mean population-wise, there were six. And you'll see those are the six that vigorously debated the Constitution. Pennsylvania, New York, Massachusetts, Virginia, North Carolina, and South Carolina. And South Carolina really wasn't that populated as far as, you know, they didn't have that much in population in compared to Virginia. Virginia was the big dog. But the reason that South Carolina vigorously debated the Constitution was really more over slavery, if you think about it, because they saw the standing down of the slave trade. And when we went through this before, I think South Carolina basically was, I'll just say, those in the convention, the debates on the federal constitution for ratification, that convention in South Carolina, I believe that there was some contentions, or I should say some purported the idea that within 20 years, the northern states will make, you know, they'll come to their senses and they'll realize how important slavery is for the southern states, and they'll just forget about that 20-year ban on the importation of slaves. And who knows, slavery may actually once again make a rebound into all the states, that all states will enjoy slavery. So, sorry about the sarcasm, but as we kind of look at, you know, the debate over suffrage, this was so important that they wanted to make sure it was galvanized for the little states. What do I mean by that? Galvanized. That means that there was this protective layer, or there was this protective injection into the Constitution that ensured that the states could not lose their equal suffrage in the Senate without their consent, which is precisely why Article 5 did exactly what it did. And that's why we've been talking about this. We've created the truth about the 17th Amendment. Because the 17th Amendment did not touch Article 5 and that little line that says that no state without its consent shall be deprived of its equal suffrage in the Senate. So here's the question. Where did your state give their consent to losing their equal suffrage in the Senate, to where these senators no longer have to listen to the state legislature? Now, when we say equal suffrage in the Senate, that no state without its consent shall be deprived of this, we're not talking about the state in general. This is a very specific term referring to the state legislature. That is how it was defined, that the state legislature wasn't this populace. It wasn't, you know, we the people, because they wanted to make sure that the sovereigns in the state government had this check on the federal government and was able to basically make sure that they wouldn't dive into treaties that would basically jeopardize their sovereignty and so forth. Those things that they would care about. So we would invite you to get very active, in this campaign in trying to help your illiterate, and I mean, most people, everybody's illiterate on this stuff. I mean, there's nobody, just like there's nobody out there trying to say the Department of Transportation needs to be shut down because there was no amendment in the Constitution in accordance with what Madison, Monroe, and Andrew Jackson, three presidents, said the Constitution needed to be ratified before they could create or exercise any power like the Department of Transportation. Where is that group out there? Why are the John Birchers not taking this charge on? Do we need to shut down the Department of Transportation? Oh, well, maybe they would feel like they would look like fools, or maybe they don't care about the truth. It's the same thing with this equal suffrage in the Senate. Why is it that there is nobody that's actually trying to make hay out of this? And I'm telling you, this goes back to, you know, that fairy tale where, you know, a person was basically making gold out of things. And so when we start laying this argument down, all we need to do is really just marry these things, because right now I haven't placed the academics to this, but I will, and it will be irrefutable, just like the petitions, that we'll place the citations to actually prove what that means, that equal suffrage in the Senate was for the state legislature. And again, this argument of real-time politics couldn't even be fathomed. I mean, they maybe it would have been just really, let me just say this. It took a long time for people to finally get to a point of seeing these paradigm shifts of our society with energy shifts and other, you know, cultural shifts and so forth, to where people were actually beginning to start seeing the real future of, you know, mankind, where, you know, what was this not actualized, but they were imagining. And I'll give you a good example. Go back and look at how Spencer Tracy was almost like forecasting the direction of our society, that people would have little watches with televisions and communication devices, all of these types of compact things, and being able to fly around in a trash can or a little cup or whatever. Folks, when we finally got to this merger of the Industrial Revolution, technology, and these types of things, at this point, they were just playing with electronics and radio and these types of things, and they realized the potential. Back in Madison's day, they couldn't understand that we would be able to transmit radios and communicate all around the world simultaneously. They couldn't even fathom putting a satellite up into orbit. And as we look today, I think that those men, as brilliant as they were, they were still limited within their realm. There's no doubt in my mind that the way they designed that Constitution, they would have integrated representation, actually live representation from the state, instead of creating this big, huge plot of land for the District of Columbia. I believe that the District of Columbia could really be shut down. I believe that just the needful buildings would be necessary, that the federal government doesn't need to basically have, you know, any stake in any land other than the land that these buildings sit on and the parking and access or what have you. They don't need all that land. The Constitution only allows them to have those things that are necessary. And when we look at how many parasites that have taken, you know, roost in the District of Columbia or in that general central area of what we can call Mordor on the Potomac, there's no doubt that we could easily be far better represented, have a far more efficient, lower cost government. And the reason I'm getting into this is because I was getting infuriated this past weekend in listening how stupid people can be regarding the education system and standing it down or getting rid of it or what have you, and how to do that. Because, I mean, you know, you don't just look at a problem by figuring out how to fit a bandage on it. You got to really look at what is it we're trying to do, and what is the best way to do that, putting everything aside, just throw everything on the table off, just get rid of everything, and say, how can we do it better today without even thinking the way it's being done? And I will tell you that is actually a very simple process. But before I get into that, there was one little blurb I needed to give you today. You need to start planning accordingly for the Windows 10 retirement this year. Now, there are some people that will need to be in Windows 11 because they won't give it up. But you need to maintain Windows 10 on most of your systems if you want to have any facsimile of some privacy. I mean, Windows 10 isn't great. I'm not a fan of it. I actually have Windows 7 running on a few of my systems. And the best way to go is getting off of Windows completely and going to a Linux platform. So, for what it's worth, you need to start planning accordingly. Even though you may have to do some things on Windows, I would try to figure out how to merge Linux into your life, because you'll be far more secure and you will be able to do things without, you know, Big Brother knowing everything that you're doing, because they want to control you. As a matter of fact, I just get infuriated when I see all these baiting memes like, you know, how come food is still so expensive? The globalist plan was to literally wipe out our food supply so that we would be eating roaches and all sorts of, you know, nasty food that they were going to just, oh, well, here's nutrition. So as people start pointing to Trump, oh, well, look at the cost of eggs still and these types of things, it's going to take a while. And I'm not even convinced Trump's going to care about those types of things. I think that the new age stuff, because look at what's going on with education. The new age stuff is, you know, just the old age just packaged with a new age to it. It is not a solution. So when it comes to education, I'm just surprised how many people that are involved in the quote-unquote education system and comment, the educators and the educated people that are commenting on this, I'm just surprised how illiterate and stupid they really are. What must be done if we're going to save America is abolish teachers in classrooms. First off, just to be sure, when we get rid of the teachers, there goes the teachers' union. Now, if you really want to actually put a target on yourself, start saying these things, because the most powerful union in America is the teachers' union. And if you start repeating what I'm saying and you actually have some prominence and you're out there, I'll tell you what, they may have somebody on top of a roof someday taking shots at you like they did with Trump. Now, it wasn't necessarily the teachers, but this is the largest progressive bastion there is as far as a group of people that are contributing money and their livelihood to the demise of America, the teachers' union. So we need to abolish the teachers and the classrooms and replace the content that you get in those classrooms with videos. And as a matter of fact, I've talked about this before, but we need to get the best educators. We need to create a level of competition to basically determine who is actually teaching the subject matter the best. I would submit, just on mathematics, just on basic mathematics, and I feel compelled to call this guy or actually reach out to this guy and bring him onto the show, because I honestly think that this would be the real future of America. You don't need to have a classroom. I mean, I know that there are parents that need babysitters, and I believe that the churches would be far better for that to happen. I know the kids can easily be, you know, I'll just say, have the molestations, those types of problems that have existed before with some of the churches, or if not all of the churches, because children are very vulnerable, and it happens in the school system just because you're not hearing it, because the school system protects itself best. The only reason it is doesn't get leaked out is because it is not a moral vestige. It is not this haven of righteousness that, you know, people within churches, at least they have a conscience. They see things and they blow the whistle. There's not a lot of whistleblowing in the education system. As a matter of fact, very little bit. And usually it's just regarding politics, ideologies, those types of things. But it's not enough. It is not enough to protect our children and, you know, in our future, especially what our children should be able to do in the future. It is a travesty that the current generations coming out of our education system are so far behind. And as a matter of fact, they're old too. As a matter of fact, if we actually converted our education system back to what the framers had, which is homeschooling, which is allowing children to get educated at their own speed, we would probably have college graduates at age 17, 18, and 19, and actually be out in the job force before some of these kids that are going through these formal classroom educations where they're 25, 26. We could actually see if we instituted a streamlined educational system process where we got rid of classrooms, we got rid of the teachers, and it was literally just quality education. Now, I'm not saying that you won't need tutors. I'm not saying that there won't be kids that won't need to be tutored. But I believe tutors can be done, you know, online just as well, because the content is online. How many people are using chisel and stone in the classroom anymore? I mean, you may have chemistry, you may have those types of things, but I would venture to say that chemistry, biology, and those types of things could easily become an introductory college course where, you know, you'd actually go to a specialized local institution, which could be a church, that would have the types of classrooms and the ability to dissect your frog or whatever's necessary. You got to remember that I think most people today have an appreciation and a basic understanding of the combustion engine and basic understanding, at least most people, back in the framers' days, they couldn't even fathom these things. They couldn't fathom rockets and missiles and guidance systems to be able to get up into space and creating satellites and understanding these things. There are people that kind of understand everything. Heavens forbid. We actually have everybody kind of understanding mostly everything, because we have the capacity in our heads to do this. We shouldn't be selling ourselves short and saying, oh, no, we need to keep doing it the way we're doing. The faster we can introduce truth, the faster we can introduce the laws of physics, the laws of you know, chemistry, or that'd be physics as well, biology, those types of things, so that these younger minds can actually start comprehending, we would be surprised how this society would actually start moving forward. Now, giving it into the hands of the churches and or local community centers, the people that care. You can go to a godless community center if that's what you want. But if you go to a church, the churches can compete. I honestly think that this is where the free market is. Those parents that, you know, they may be, you know, Christian in some respects, or they consider themselves Christian, but they're not, you know, born again, or, you know, they're not that fervent in their religion. They may be, you know, maybe a Catholic or what have you, where, you know, they're just not indifferent, but they would be willing to actually go to a different church to actually give their children a better education. Because, boy, I'll tell you what, these Seventh-day Adventists, they've really, you know, innovated in improving the ability to educate children at a much faster rate. And I'm just using that as an example. Well, now we're going into break, but I want to, you know, kind of finish this thought on how we need to be looking, but how we shouldn't be looking, more importantly. So when we come back, I'm going to talk about how we shouldn't be looking at education. And we'll be right back after this basic promo. Thank you so much.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so we've got to start challenging these lost paradigms, these paradigms that we're trapped in. One of the paradigms is that, obviously we have to have education at the national level. Well, if you think so, then there's got to be an amendment for it, because the federal government cannot just do anything that they want to do. Just like the Department of Transportation. Remember, I already started the show off talking about that. If it is not enumerated, the only thing the federal government can spend money on regarding education is educating our children to be prepared to be war fighters by the time they become an adult. Because the requirement if we go back to full compliance, we don't have mercenary forces anymore. We, the people, have to defend ourselves. We, the people, have to execute the laws ourselves. In other words, we are an integral part of this society. There is a symbiosis between we, the people, and our governing. And that it's in our best interest to quit having these little stupid, what was the best way of saying it? These biases or these little comfort zones of saying, we have to put our racial biases, our cultural biases, we got to throw that crap away. We were a melting pot. We ain't melting anymore. I mean, we're dividing ourselves and we're being conquered as we speak right now. So the only way that we're actually going to be able to change is we all have to start, putting our skin in the game and saying, you know what? We have to become a nation based on the rule of law, that our king is the law, not people. We got to quit thinking that these people are going to take care of us. That is a bad paradigm, because people will always take care of themselves first before they take care of you. And you'll be lucky if you got taken care of. That's what we're seeing today. And as a matter of fact, the closer you are to the kitchen, the better fed you are. And so, but not too many people are that close to the kitchen. I mean, even when you look at communism and the communism organizations in America, most of those people are really out there and they're struggling. But that's why they get sucked into these movements like BLM and what have you. Right? Antifa, what have you. They literally get sucked into these things because they think that that's the best way to put bread on or butter on their bread. We have to start actually putting everything on the table, because once you put the truth on the table, it'll actually become clear that communism is not a way forward. That capitalism isn't necessarily the way forward either. That there is such a thing as an enlightened society where we use discipline and we work together. We don't go into the altruistic state where, we take these paradigms that a janitor's labor is equal to a surgeon. But we also have to be very guarded. We also have to acknowledge that with those people that have the type of cash that we see in people like Gates, Musk, and every other people, they're at a different level where they can come in and buy your state. And that can't happen. The concept of what is acceptable in property ownership and so forth, we have to have these conversations, folks. If not, you're going to continually have kings rise among us and actually rule you at the local level and what have you. And I believe that this is where we need to get some smart people at the table and actually start talking about how can we govern ourselves as well as govern, as we all can govern together. Not as a democracy, but based on the rule of law and republicanism. I believe that we need to look at the counties. The counties actually need to safeguard against those people infiltrating from other counties. And as a matter of fact, I believe that a county is going to come to a point where, you know, that rich person can only buy up as much as they possibly can and carry their weight around as much as they possibly can. And as much as those people would love to have that happen. But when we look at the obscene amount, the gas, or I should say, instead of the gap, the abyss between those that are, I'll just say, middle income, between those and these billionaires and so forth, we may actually see in the near year or two the first trillionaire. It is not that unfathomable. A trillionaire. Okay? So, and as a matter of fact, I wouldn't be surprised if there are some, but they just don't want you to know that they've amassed that much money. And how are they doing that? They're doing that by the aid of government. So this goes back to that brilliant mind of Cynthia Lee, where she says, we need to extract our justice and get all of this stuff back and get this back to the people. And how can we do that? Well, I believe we can do that, but I honestly believe some of the smartest things we can do is we can keep the gold and we can burn the cash. Because cash is absolutely worthless, and we've got to move away from any form of just cash, you know, fiat currency, burn it, and actually get back to precious metals and those types of things. Now, the reality is we've been shipping our precious metals, and we've been shipping our resources abroad. This has been happening for a while. I can tell you with W. Bush was actually shipping our food supply, you know, our grains in our silos and so forth. Those things were being dumped out of the silos when he was in office because he was suppressing the rising cost of food. Because he did that, he put that in motion, that's what caused the Arab Spring under Obama's watch. All of these things are connected, folks. And when they can control those types of things, this is why the federal government shouldn't even have a reserve. Every state should have the reserve. Every county should be considering what it would take to take care of their own people regarding energy and what have you. Because that's where the reserves need to be. They need to be closest to you because, you know what? When it comes to the federal government and them having it, what do they usually do? Oh, well, let's give ourselves an advantage. And by the time it gets out to the common person, there's nothing left. Because they have that kind of power. But when we're empowered and it basically flows out to where the people and their local governments are empowered, we will be far better taken care of. If you see people that have the aspiration of owning the world, then you have to challenge them and even challenge yourself. Could this be the next Hitler? Could this be the next tyrant that Bill Gates is just as bad and just as evil? So when we look at how these people have earned that money by the deals, by backroom deals, it's not just backroom deals, but by the support of government. When government basically starts picking winners and losers and it helps elevate companies like Google and so forth, I'm just here to tell you folks, things have to change dramatically. I don't have all the solutions, but I do know one thing. once we get government back into the compliance of the Constitution, we'll be very slow in thinking about what we need to do to make changes. If the change empowers the states and local governments, then that's going to be a good change. If the change is going to actually empower the federal government with more power, that's a bad thing. If you got that in between your ears, if you've got that in your brain housing group, then you're getting it right. Because when we actually empower government to do more and more, the federal government, the central government, once it becomes this all-power machine, that's it. It's over. And look, they have become this all-powerful machine, but it is not legitimate. That is the biggest problem we have with people that are out there trying to sell you this bill of goods, that this is legitimate and you need to bail yourself out. Granted, there are people that are literally being tossed to and fro. My heart goes out to those people. There are people that are literally being attacked. Their household, their family, their property, they are under attack. And the more they speak out, the more they get attacked. That's not good. See, that's what happens with government. And they start dividing and isolating. It is not good at all. But what really kills me is how we hear the rhetoric on both sides about shutting down the Department of Education. It's almost like, you know, now that we're close to shutting it down, just like Trump, remember in Trump's first term, as soon as he got elected, instead of saying we're going to get rid of Obamacare, well, we're going to repeal and replace it. And that's what scares me. Unconstitutional is unconstitutional. It doesn't matter who's giving it to you. We got to get rid of it. They have no business taxing us. That's a part of the fraud in the debt. If they don't have the authority to spend money on it, it is fraudulent debt, especially because they're bringing in more and more debt for every dollar that they're spending. I mean, when you look at the legitimate amount of money that comes in, now, some people have made these cases, well, the legitimate money goes out the door and all the illegitimate money is what we really keep. There's no such thing. That bottom line, when you actually have more going out or more coming in as far as debt, and, you know, when you look at all the revenues, there's no real separation. If it's coming in via taxes or it's coming in via debt, it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter, because what we're spending the money on, is most of it is illegitimate. Almost all of it is illegitimate. When we look at the Department of Defense, they shouldn't be getting all of this money. This should be going into the militia and the Navy. The Navy is our national defense system. It is our external defense system, period, folks. Get with the program. Get with the Constitution. The Constitution made the Navy and the Marine Corps our external forces. They didn't even mention the Marine Corps, but the Marine Corps was a department of the Navy. Now, the Army, Air Force, or all this other stuff, that is strictly homeland defense. That's it. They're not to deploy. They're not to be fighting wars abroad. If we need to bolster any ranks, it would be the Marine Corps and the Navy. This is one of the reasons why, I've said this over the past month and a half, as we started basically exposing the fact that they have ignored, in the very beginning, these initial presidents from Washington and, let me see, Monroe, even Madison. These men ignored the Navy. I mean, even Thomas Jefferson, even though he basically bought into the expanse of the Navy under Adams, and Adams, the reason Adams understood the Navy, because he was from New England, and he understood how important the shipping of everything into America and out. And that was our external interface. We didn't have, as I mentioned, if you look, it was not very reasonable for Britain to basically land on the Pacific coast and then march all the way across the continent to attack us. That was not a good logistical idea. especially how far they would have to ship and how long they would have to. I mean, they'd be decimated by the time they got here. And it's the same thing going up north and going out and around and about these long campaigns in trying to attack us. No, they're going to be as efficient and as effective as they possibly can by coming straight into us by our rivers and so forth. And Adams understood that. That's why he understood the need of defending the coastline, even extending up into Canada, even extending down into the Gulf of Mexico. So when we look at, you know, the few, even though as hard as I am on Adams for some of the things he did and listening to Hamilton as much as he did, at least Adams had this one right paradigm. And Jefferson basically kind of inherited that from him. I think, I don't know if he ate any crow or if he said, you know what, John, you're absolutely right. I gave you too much flack, and this is actually the smart thing to do, because he was quick to use the Navy the Navy and the Marine Corps when our commerce was attacked out in the Persian Gulf on the shores of Tripoli. So anyway, let me get back to what we were talking about on Friday. Now, it's obvious that we don't want to create government that we can't sustain. In other words, who pays for government? We're going to have to pay for it. There's no such thing as just taking and taking and giving and giving. You will run out of things to take, and eventually you won't have anything to give. Or what ends up happening is government just becomes insatiable over power and control, and they could just control everything. So we have to make sure that when we're going to have government, we have to be able to pay for those services or those things that we need. Now, when it comes to hardware, I'm always of the opinion that hardware is cheaper than labor. So we don't want to create permanent services of labor, but we do need to be able to create permanent hardware services like infrastructure, like, you know, the internet, like roadways, highways, communications, those types of things. And so is that best for the private sector? I don't think so. Because you can't have 10 electrical lines going into your home to say, I'm buying this electricity today. I say this all the time. You can't have a competitive market. You may have a competitive market in cars to drive on the roadways they give you. You may have a competitive market in boats on the waterways and so forth. You may have some competition on the computers using the internet. But when it comes to the internet, broadband, and fiber, you're going to have 10 fibers coming into your house? You can have 20 satellites on your roof so that you can, you know, juggle between whose data you're going to use today? That doesn't make sense. And as a matter of fact, we actually see that these corporations, these cell phone corporations and so forth, they are robbing us of our wealth when we should actually, because if you look at how much money is involved in these things, from energy, from the cell phone services, look at the league of billionaires that have actually become billionaires because they own their own nation's cell phone service. The guys that were appointed or anointed to actually go in and set up a cell phone service in India and all these other nations, those people were literally the ones chosen to become the rich ones. Because that, if you look at all the billionaires, that's how they got there. And instead of actually allowing that to be a free market, we fooled ourselves. Look at those people that are actually now using their wealth against us when those types of things should have been infrastructure. They should have been government hardware services, not people services, but hardware services. And there's ways to do this stuff right, folks. We have lots of people that understand how to do these things so that we can minimize cost. But bottom line, we have to change our paradigm and think that everything has to be free market. This idea of not having government roads is about as... Well, anyway, I'm running out of sarcasm. So what we need to do is we need to actually start... I keep saying we've got to have your campaign begin today. Now, how many of you know, and I'm going to talk to Tammy because I know that there are perennial candidates in Wyoming. There are perennial candidates in your state and in your county. People that constantly run, and they're good people. They're conservative or constitutional or what have you. But they keep on doing the same thing. They keep on, you know, failing to place context to what really matters. And what really matters most, folks, is compliance to the Constitution. You want to fix the problems? Compliance to the Constitution by all public servants. They all need to comply. They make these perennial candidates, they make the mistakes that they need the typical funding and to be the nice guy, and, you know, they don't want to be too harsh. They, you know, they just go down the status quo and they lose every time. They buy into this, oh, well, I'm not going to have any dirty tricks. I want it. And what ends up happening is the end of the election campaign or the end of the campaign, the guy that, you know, didn't promise basically says, hey, we don't want any dirty tricks, and makes everybody else promise. The incumbent is notorious for unleashing bad news about you that basically makes everybody go, oh, well, I'm not voting for that guy. He's not honest in his business dealings. And it's all propaganda. How many times have we seen candidates actually lose their election from fraudulent statements that get printed in the news? Why is there never a recourse to go after that news article, the person that printed it, the person that wrote it, and the company that printed it? Because they basically meddled in an election, knowing that that's exactly what it would do, even though there was no truth behind it. And I'm telling you, if you run the story and it's found to be fallacious and a lie or deceptive, then those people ought to fry. You've heard me say this, you know, and when it comes to our politics, when it comes to our liberty and so forth, we need to really step up the impact of those people, or I should say the punishment of those people. I believe if you get involved in voter fraud, you vote twice in an election, you should lose your citizenship. If you're involved in, you know, election fraud where lots of people get disenfranchised, or you basically pump in a bunch of deceitful, you know, ballots or what have you, or you deceitfully change the numbers because of your software, those people not only should lose their citizenship, they should lose their property and be deported. I think that we can solve most of our problems, like with Gates, Bill Gates, and the rest of these really, these globalist billionaires that are living among us, Zuckerberg, what have you. Basically, because of what they've done, they should actually lose everything, just be shipped out with the clothes on their back, and that's it. They lose their citizenship, and they don't come here no more. No communique. They're persona non gratis. They're out. We need to start drawing that line. And what happens with that money? Well, I don't like the fact that government sits there on money because now they can use that as a weapon. So I honestly think that, and the last thing I want to do is see it go into court where the courts can make millions of dollars off of figuring out how to dole it out. We've got to come up with a way of basically expunging that money back to where it needs to go efficiently, where it doesn't ingratiate or aggrandize government's powers. We're supposed to not have a rich government. The government only functions in the capacity that we've given it, and that is it. They're not to have these resources and bank, you know, rainy day funds to be able to do something nice for you. You know, go plow your driveway or grade your driveway for you so that, you know, you don't get all these potholes because you don't have a paved driveway because you live so far out there that your driveway is a few miles long and you can't afford to have a paved road on your own property. And then you complain about driving on the state road saying, I have a right to just basically travel anywhere I want to. You can't do this to me. folks, I know that when we actually go back, because there are problems with state laws, there's problems with state constitutions, because even the states have never been given the authority to create, maintain these highways. But once we sever the federal government, get rid of the Department of Transportation, then we realize that the state doesn't have that power. Let me ask you something. Do you want the state to have that power? Do you really want the state to say, okay, we're not touching the roads, highways, waterways, or anything, and they're just going to fall apart? It's up to you, the driver on there, to fix your own potholes. And really? So this is why I believe that it'll be very quick, that when we go into these constitutional conventions, I believe the counties will basically delegate basic infrastructure responsibilities to supporting the counties, and they'll do it smart. They'll do it smart so that the counties will actually have good interfaces between their sister counties and be able to grow and increase, you know, having the opportunity to increase their throughput, opportunity of business, opportunity of productivity, capturing the resources, what have you. But as I see it, these things can happen until we actually start changing, taking back your state constitution and actually rewriting it so that it becomes a general government instead of the all-powerful poobah of all the counties. That was the biggest stupidity that was ever done. You don't go off as sovereigns, like sovereign counties, and go create somebody that's more sovereign than you. You know, it's almost like going down the street, having a whole bunch of people in a nice, you know, influential neighborhood, and then going outside that neighborhood and next, you know, the closest person, you know, just letting chance be chance and saying, we're empowering you to be the grand poobah over all of us. Well, how stupid is that? Because next thing you know, they start, you know, aggrandizing their power. They start getting more money and more money out of here. That's what's happened to our federal government. And it's not like they were ever given that power. They assumed that power. Over time, because of our illiteracy, they convinced us that they had power that they never did. And this is how they created corporations. This is how they've done all of these evil deeds. You can't believe these people that what we have in our governments is legitimate. This education, it's not legitimate. So why are we even having this conversation regarding education and what to do with it? Easy. Get rid of it. Get rid of it. The state doesn't have it either. Most states do not have that in their constitution. Give it back to the people. And, oh, by the way, if you're going to get into the parenting way, you're going to have kids, you better make sure you have an idea how you're going to educate them. Because it's not the whole, I mean, even though the whole society benefits, it is really not our responsibility to basically resolve your poor decisions in, you know, I'll just say the consequences of your decisions. Let's just say that. Because as I have said, that is a plan of evil. When we try to remove the consequences of other people's decisions, I mean, that's exactly what our government has been doing. And you've heard me say this. They keep on removing the consequences of sin. And you know, and we actually all lose because of that. Because look at our society today. Anyway, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract. And with Republic Review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.